kind of goes to show what kind of a community of law enforcement we have in Alaska.
The standoff ends in Hoona. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 30th of August. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the Alaska Libertarian Party says no to a Lisa Murkowski run.
It's tough enough educating people about our principles. You know, we don't need somebody out there who doesn't understand our principles or doesn't believe in them claiming they're libertarian.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
The standoff is over between Alaska State Troopers and a Hoona man who allegedly shot and killed two police officers Saturday night. It ended shortly after 9:30 this morning when the suspect, 45-year-old John Marvin Jr., was taken into custody after leaving his home where he'd been barricaded since the shootings. Marvin is charged with two counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of Hoona police officers Tony Wallace and Matt Tokioka. Troopers spokeswoman Megan Peters in Anchorage declined to discuss specific tactics used to end the standoff, citing an ongoing investigation.
All I am saying is the standoff ended after Marvin exited the residence in response to efforts by search.
CERT is the trooper's special emergency response team. Peters says law enforcement personnel from around the state provided resources and manpower during the incident.
Whenever something like this happens, it's a hardship for everyone involved. It kind of goes to show what kind of a community of law enforcement we have in Alaska.
Troopers say Marvin shot Wallace and Tokioka shortly after 10:30 p.m. Saturday in what is being described as an ambush witnessed by the dead officers' families. Meanwhile, life is slowly getting back to normal in Hoona, a city of about 800 residents 40 miles west of Juneau. Mayor Wendy Skaffelstad says the town is in the process of grieving. A bouquet of flowers was placed on the police department steps yesterday, and condolences are pouring in from all over the world. Skaffelstad says the deaths of Wallace and Tokioka have been especially hard on the city's lone remaining police officer, Chief John Millen.
A guy, he broke down on my shoulder and he cried like a baby, you know, and I kept saying I did everything I could. I did everything I could to try to save the boys, and he said, I just didn't do it. And I said, don't worry about that.
Millen has been placed on leave this week to allow him time to grieve. Acting City Administrator Bob Prunella expects him back to work Monday, if not sooner. In the meantime, Prunella has named Wrangell Police Lieutenant Merlin Ellers acting chief. Another Wrangell officer, Joe Paul, is also filling in. Prunella says Sitka, Yakutat, and other communities have offered to loan out officers in the coming weeks as Hoona recruits new officers.
So we've got a spread it around so various police forces can spare a guy for a few days and try and keep our force up to snuff.
Classes were canceled today at Hoona School due to the standoff, which closed at the main road through town. Hoona City Schools Superintendent Charla Wright says students will be back in class tomorrow. She says grief counselors will be on hand to help children with any emotions they may be feeling in the aftermath of the shootings.
We know that a lot of students were very kind of close to Tony in particular, one of the police officers. He did a lot of support, and after school, open gym and activities with youth. He was really very much involved, helped with wrestling.
Court records show the man charged in the slayings was accused of attacking the same two officers last year, but assault and other charges filed at the same time against John Marvin Jr. were dismissed in December. The prosecutor assigned to the case declined Monday to say why the charges were dropped. Amy Williams, an assistant district attorney, says her office is reeling from the shootings late Saturday, and she is not prepared to talk about last year's case. Court documents show both both officers were injured in the August 2009 attack after they responded to a call from a woman who had said Marvin entered her home without permission. Records say the attack ended when Marvin was subdued with a stun gun. Governor Sean Parnell has ordered state flags lowered to half staff through Tuesday to honor the two officers. A memorial service is being planned. The Alaska Libertarian Party announced today they will not consider letting Senator Lisa Murkowski use their spot on the November ballot if she loses her primary race against Joe Miller. But the ALP said there may be support for letting Miller run as a Libertarian if he doesn't win the tight contest for the Republican U.S. Senate nomination. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Standing in front of the water fountain at the Lusac Library in Anchorage, Alaska Libertarian Party Chairman Scott Kohlhaas stressed the party has not been contacted by Lisa Murkowski's campaign, but he said rampant speculation over the past several days demanded the party make a decision. He said the executive committee met in an emergency meeting and came to a unanimous conclusion.
The worst thing for the Libertarian Party would be to have somebody who was espousing the fact that they were Libertarian, but then giving unlibertarian positions. Libertarianism is a consistent application of freedom to all political issues.
Kohlhaas says Senator Murkowski's record doesn't meet that test. But he says the idea of having such a high-profile candidate on the ballot was tempting. It was seen as a way to help break the two-party system.
I received a congratulatory call from our national chairman today, thanking us for making the right decision. But I can tell you that our state executive committee was unanimous, but that the national party leadership was not unanimous. There was some support for the idea of Lisa being our first elected senator.
Kohlhaas says the party would be more open to allowing Joe Miller to use their spot on the ballot if he loses the primary.
I cannot speak for an executive committee. I can tell you this, that he has more support on our executive committee than Lisa did.
The Murkowski campaign is also stressing that they haven't talked to the Alaska Libertarian Party. Murkowski campaign spokesman Steve Wachowski says the idea isn't even on their radar while the race is still undecided.
We are focused on this vote count. It's very close. And there's up to 25,000 outstanding ballots. That's a lot of ballots left to be counted. So, there's been a lot of hype about the possible Libertarian Party run. It just we all agreed, the team, when we met with the senator after last Tuesday, that we weren't going to discuss it, that we were going to stay focused here on this count on Tuesday and the continuing counts, and that would be for another time in another place.
The Libertarian decision sets up the possibility of a general election matchup between Republican Joe Miller and Democrat Scott McAdams. The Sitka mayor was not well known around the state until last week, but a new poll shows he has a shot against Miller. It shows Joe Miller with 47% of the vote compared to 39% for McAdams. 14% of registered voters were undecided. That news, combined with the Libertarian announcement, had the state Democratic Party reacting with optimism.
Well, I think Scott McAdam wins in November.
Patty Higgins is chair of the Alaska Democratic Party. She says donations to Scott McAdam's campaign have picked up in the last week. The party is still waiting to hear if they'll have funding help from the National Democratic Organization.
Oh, I'm very hopeful. They too have to allocate scarce resources. So they're at the planning table, and I'm sure they'll let us know as soon as they figure it out.
The Division of Elections will begin counting the absentee and question ballots at regional election offices around the state tomorrow morning. The vote tallies will be updated throughout the day on the Division of Elections website. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Joe Miller is chiding Senator Lisa Murkowski's campaign team for what he calls, quote, outside help. But he has also brought in an outsider. A staffer for Indiana Republican Congressman Mike Pierce is assisting his team. Pence is also the chairman of the House Republican Conference. Miller has accused the group that works to get Republicans elected to the Senate of, in his words, quote, meddling in the vote counting process. But Lisa Murkowski came out swinging today against his accusations, calling his comments blatantly false and astounding. She said in a press release that Miller is acting like he's afraid of Republicans. Miller told ABC News that he believes the National Republican Senatorial Committee is trying to, quote, skew the results in Murkowski's direction. But Murkowski's campaign says they're relying on their own team and local volunteers. The chief counsel for the NRSC was sent to Alaska, but the group says he's no longer involved. Joe Miller told ABC that he talked over the weekend with Senator John Cornyn, who heads the Republican group. Miller says Cornyn promises he is pulling out members sent to Alaska. The NRSC has not returned to APRN's calls despite repeated requests. Both Republican Senate candidates have engaged lawyers to watch over ballot counting efforts at the Division of Elections, and both are bracing for a possible recount if the numbers continue to be close. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Palin supporters turn out for the controversial Washington, D.C. rally.
I'm not totally convinced myself that she's presidential material. Maybe she is. I might be wrong on that, but I'm not convinced of that yet.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message is sponsored by the FAA.
U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller of Fairbanks has been a hot media commodity since taking the lead in the Republican primary. After stepping off set from filming a spot with CBS's Face the Nation in Fairbanks yesterday, Miller said he's done dozens of interviews since last Tuesday's election.
Alaska Dispatch, which is an online publication, the Salina Journal, my hometown paper. I talked to the Wichita News down in Kansas. We're on Face the Nation this morning. We are on Fox News a couple of times tomorrow. There's another outlet that we're interviewing with. I think I've got a radio program this afternoon.
With campaigns suspended as they await the count of absentee and questioned ballots in the close race between Miller and incumbent Lisa Murkowski, Miller says he can handle the media attention and is using it to get his message of federal restraint out.
Obviously, not everybody's excited about the idea of restricting the role of the federal government, so we've got a little more hostility perhaps than what we had in the primary, but frankly, it's a good opportunity to get the message out.
Miller advocates for defunding federal health care and transitioning away from Social Security, but he says that the shift would be gradual unless the federal government goes bankrupt. Thousands of people gathered on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Saturday for Fox News commentator Glenn Beck's Restore America rally, which featured Sarah Palin. APRN's Libby Casey checked in with the crowd about their opinions of Alaska's former governor.
Glenn Beck organized the rally to follow up on Tea Party gatherings, but said instead of focusing on politics, he wanted this event to feature American heroes, devotion to God, and what he called a return to traditional values. For the most part, there weren't political signs, and while Beck kept the message positive Saturday, one day later, he criticized President Obama's religious beliefs. Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin addressed the crowd from in front of the Lincoln Memorial.
So with pride in the red, white, and blue, with gratitude to our men and women in uniform, let's stand together, let's stand with honor, let's restore America.
Palin's words were broadcast throughout the throngs from jumbotrons and were met with wild enthusiasm. Karen West traveled from Tennessee to attend the rally and wore an Uncle Sam costume with hat, coat, and pants covered in stars and stripes. She says hearing Palin speak was a special moment.
She's awesome. She's a wonderful lady, and I really respect her a lot. I think she's straightforward. She's honest. She's not afraid to tell you what she really thinks. Even if you don't agree with her, that's okay, because at least you know what she thinks. And to me, that's what's important. I don't have to agree with you. I just have to believe that you're honest.
West says she would vote for Palin if she ran for national office, and in fact would vote for anyone Palin endorses. The power of getting a political nod from Palin is in the spotlight right now, as pundits are wondering how much her support is worth. She backed Alaskan Republican Senate candidate Joe Miller this summer, who then got funding from the California-based Tea Party Express and did far better than expected at the polls last week. But rally attendee Dennis Wren, a retired engineer from Pennsylvania, says while he admires Palin and likes her politics, he doesn't think she's ready to lead the nation.
I'm not totally convinced myself that she's presidential material. Maybe she is. I might be wrong in that, but I'm not convinced of that yet. And my worry is that her popularity might divide the conservative vote enough so that we may get outvoted.
Saturday was the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech on the National Mall, and critics said Beck should not have chosen the day for his rally. Civil rights leaders held their own Reclaiming the Dream march nearby. The crowd for Beck was overwhelmingly white, but there were some people of color, like African-American Marietta Williams of Maryland. Williams was one of the few people who planned to attend both rallies, and she was happy with Beck's religious message. Williams says while she wouldn't necessarily vote for Sarah Palin, she is glad the Alaskan was part of the 2008 presidential contest.
She brought an energy there that we needed to feel, because our nation is really, we're really going in, you know, morally, we're becoming very bankrupt. It's gotten worse, to tell you the truth.
Not everyone on the mall approved of Palin. Washingtonian Virginia Harris went to the rally to politely disagree with its message, and she really doesn't like the former governor.
I believe that Sarah Palin has set women back decades. Her overtures of empowerment to women are the antithesis of empowerment to women.
But Harris was definitely in the minority at the Beck rally, 2 years after Sarah Palin was plucked from Alaska to run for vice president. She has an audience. They're not united on whether she should run for president or what her role in politics should be, but they want to hear more of what Palin has to say and cheer her on in the national spotlight. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
A plan by rapid package shipper UPS to furlough Anchorage-based pilots is meeting resistance with the help of Alaska's elected officials. Earlier this year, UPS announced plans to furlough some 300 pilots nationally, citing a company-wide cost-cutting regime. Almost all the pilots affected, 262 of them, were based out of the company's Anchorage hub. Because the furloughs affect the pilots with the least seniority, and the recently established Anchorage hub has the greatest number of junior pilots. Pilots are fighting the move. Bob Thrush, president of the Independent Pilots Association, says UPS has gone back on its word.
We're very concerned that UPS reneged on a commitment to the pilots. You know, when every one of us came to work here, they basically told us, tear up your resume. This is the last job you're ever going to have or need. And they're reneging on that commitment.
Alaska Senators Mark Begich and Lisa Murkowski have put pressure on UPS to reconsider, and Alaska Governor Sean Parnell and Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan have contacted UPS officials on the issue. So far, about 109 UPS pilots from Anchorage have already lost their jobs. The remaining pilots are slated to lose their jobs by the end of next March. Thrush says the furloughs were not necessary because the pilots initially volunteered shift and vacation pay cuts to head off the furloughs.
We had a voluntary program to save these jobs. We had $131 million in savings on the table, and we'd like to see some reasonable solution where these people wouldn't have to be furloughed. We're in a situation right now where UPS is struggling to cover all the flying they have every day because of short staffing, but they're telling us they're going to continue to lay off more pilots.
Many of the affected pilots have homes in Anchorage. IPA spokesman Brian Goday says if the UPS plan goes through, the pilots could be furloughed through 2014, and that could mean lost revenues of up to $61 million for the city and the state. But UPS spokesman Mike Monjo, speaking from Louisville, Kentucky, says there are some changes coming.
Because of the improving business conditions, the good news is that UPS will actually be reducing its pilot furlough. Our plan initially was to furlough about 300. That number is now down to 230. It's important to understand those are temporary furloughs. We will bring those pilots back to UPS when business conditions allow.
Thrush says if UPS decides to rehire any pilots, regulations demand that the furloughed pilots be offered their jobs back first. Manjo says UPS's second quarter earnings indicate a 40% increase in Asian exports, and that growth could extend to Alaska.
As business starts to rebound from the recession, we are actually doing very well in our Anchorage operation and plan to backfill any pilots who are furloughed out of Anchorage with more senior pilots from elsewhere in our network. And actually, by the end of 2010, we will grow our Anchorage pilot base by about 50 people. That growth will also translate to about 75 new package handling jobs at our Anchorage gateway. We certainly hope to return our pilots back to work as soon as business conditions allow. When we bring them back to UPS, most likely we will bring them back to work in Anchorage, yes.
The State House Transportation Committee is getting involved in the issue. A hearing on the UPS layoffs is scheduled for Tuesday morning at 9 in Anchorage to question UPS officials about the plan. UPS has 1,000 employees in Alaska and spends $328 million a year to run its operations in the state.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
Sockeye salmon are returning to British Columbia's Fraser River in one of the biggest runs seen on the river in nearly a century. Biologists say 30 million fish could return, nearly triple the original forecast. Processors are so overwhelmed that they are considering sending fish to Ketchikan for processing. KDLG's Adam Kane reports.
Because the Fraser River is in Canada, the majority of the fishery is allocated for fishermen in British Columbia. Approximately 16% of the total run is set aside for harvest in United States waters. John Garner runs the salmon division for Trident Seafoods, who operates a processing plant in Bellingham, Washington.
That's really quite a remarkable return, as you can imagine. Think of it in Bristol Bay terms. We had a return of 40 million fish in Bristol Bay year before last, and approximately 39 million, I think it was, this year. So this run is not as big as Bristol Bay, but it's quite sizable.
In the past 10 years, sockeye returns on the Fraser River have been dismal. In 2009, fewer than 2 million fish returned from the 10 million that were forecasted, resulting in a complete closure of the fishery. With the large run this year, processing capacity has become a concern for area fishermen and processors, who are reportedly stepping up operations by bringing in ice from Vancouver Island and working around the clock. Garner confirms that Trident is even considering shipping fish to Alaska for processing.
Just like in Bristol Bay, we have, in years where we have high concentration of fish and processing capacity is taxed, what we do is we put fish onto what we call long-haul tenders and run them to processing plants outside of Bristol Bay. This is the same concept, only it's running fish from Puget Sound up to, in our case, to Ketchikan.
Garner says that everyone was taken by surprise at the size of this year's sockeye run. He theorizes that the fish must have had a good supply of food in the ocean and very few predators.
Just must have been terrific ocean survival. You know, the escapement and the parent year were adequate. And then the survival rate at sea must be off the chart. We won't know that until we get the final body count, but it had to be very, very good ocean survival.
It's unclear exactly how many fishermen are participating in the Fraser River fishery this year. Garner says that a number of fishermen just now returning from Alaska have Puget Sound licenses and are trying to get out fishing as soon as they're able to do so. Because of the initially low run expectations, Trident was paying about $1.60 per pound for sockeye during the first openings. Since the supply has proven to be significantly bigger than expected and the local market has already become saturated, the price has declined to approximately $1 per pound. In Dillingham, I'm Adam Kane.
A better-than-expected pink salmon season has been winding down in southeast Alaska. As of last week, the Seine Fleet had harvested about 20 million pinks, which is about on a par with projections, but the fish have been bigger than average and they've been worth more than last year on the dock. Meanwhile, there are signs of a big pink run next year, KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
In a general sense, I think things are looking very good.
Bill Davidson is the regional commercial fisheries manager for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Southeast. The department had a preseason forecast of about 19 million fish, with a range of 11 to 32 million. Davidson was pleased with the overall catch so far, which stood at about 20 million pinks as of August 25th. By that time, the harvest was on the downswing, though there were still more openings coming up. Davidson estimated the harvest could end up in the 22 million fish range. Last year's catch was nearly 38 million. According to Davidson, the returns have varied across the region.
And there were individual streams, sometimes some of the larger producing streams that didn't do so well, but right next to those were small streams that had tremendous returns. So it's somewhat of an enigma.
The initial ex-vessel price for pinks has averaged about 30 cents a pound in Southeast, according to Davidson. That's about 7 cents higher than last year's average. The value has also been boosted by the size of the fish, which have been substantially bigger than average, according to Randy Lantine, who is fleet manager for the Icicle Seafoods plant in Petersburg.
Typically, pink salmon are 3.2, 3.3 pounds. This year, we've seen an anomaly where we're getting fish that are over 4 pounds. So, you know, numbers of fish may be 22 million, but the overall poundage that was harvested is going to be larger than an average 22 million run.
The larger fish have meant more production for Icicle, which also processed some fish shipped down from a record pink harvest in Prince William Sound.
And that helped keep the plant busy on the off days when our seiners were working. So we were able to keep that plant ticking along. There was probably a 12-day stretch where we didn't miss a beat on canning, and with that, of course, we needed a few more people to come into town.
With the expectation of a weaker run in Southeast this year, Lantine says his plant initially hired about 300 workers for the season, but he says the plant eventually brought in about 100 more from other facilities. He says the additional workers were key to keeping the plant going when the peak of the run approached towards mid-August. The Department of Fish and Game has not yet put out its official projections for next year's pink salmon run, but it's looking like it could be a big year. Regional fishery manager Bill Davidson says catches have been spectacular in the annual trawl survey of pink salmon fry that the National Marine Fisheries Service does out of its Aquay lab.
We would expect potentially very large returns based on what's been seen so far.
Participation in this year's Southeast seine season has been down this year. About 242 boats have taken part, and that number is declining as the fishery winds down. It's about 27 fewer than the 10-year average. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Adam Kane in Dillingham, and Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. If you smoke, odds are you want to quit. And if you want to quit, you're probably finding it tough to do. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. The average smoker tries 10 times before they quit for good. And you can increase your chances by calling the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. Give it a shot. It's free and it works. Call the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. The Federal Housing Administration's network of FHA-approved housing counseling agencies offers free expert advice to homeowners whose mortgages are at risk, underwater, or in need of refinancing. Visit hud.gov/Alaska for a counselor near you. This message sponsored by HUD.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.